Tested live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
So the big story of the day, the Treasury announcing this morning that it will terminate that 0.5% VAT hike that was set to take effect exactly a week from today on the 1st of May. Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana will now have to go back to Parliament with a revised budget in order to propose expenditure adjustments and to cover that shortfall in revenue. Dropping the VAT hike now leaves a gaping hole of 75 billion rand over the medium term. Apart from this, it also raises a number of additional questions. I spoke to Kaya Sithole a short while ago about, you know, the credibility of the Treasury. And where does this leave public management, public fund management? And what is this? A bit of a power struggle that's getting in the way of managing the public finances. Kaya, thank you so much for joining me. Let's get into it. This will be the third budget. It's really become very messy. What does this say about the credibility of the Treasury?
It is, I think, perhaps the greatest crisis point for National Treasury, not only because they've obviously failed to convince two iterations of parliamentarians that what they've put together as the proposal represents the best of the balance that they have to strike between the revenue that has to be raised and the funding commitments that have to be funded. But I think what is, for me, the bigger crisis point is that ultimately, it is the National Treasury that are the country's salesmen, in the sense that they're the ones that go out into the capital markets and they'll say, look, a country of this nature needs to raise so much money. Our taxes go only so far, so therefore we need to borrow this additional amount in order for us to be able to balance the books. Now, when you then have a Treasury whose ability to convince other parties, like Parliament, like society, about other revenue-raising activities, it means even those who borrow are going to be a bit more circumspect in lending to the country, because they will simply say, well, you've come to borrow from us and you can either raise this money from taxes or from other sources, but you've just observed that even when you do try to raise taxes, you do not necessarily succeed. So how do we know that you'll be able to raise the money that you need in order to pay us? So this introduces a new risk premium in every conversation that they're going to have going forward, and they'll have an enormous task of trying to convince those that are in the borrowing space that actually they still have the capacity to meet the commitments.
And we're looking at investors. Investors are always eyeing the budget. It's a clear indication of, like you said, how the economy is faring, where is it going, how are you going to manage your debt, your fiscal discipline. I worry at what they're seeing unfolding right now.
Yes, it is definitely a big problem, because what they will have to be able to contend with is the question of, well, even now, given how much South Africa already owes, and the fact that clearly when you don't raise it from taxes, you probably want to borrow more again. Is South Africa still a credible lender? And keep in mind, we're talking about a country that has been in sub-investment grade for a bit of time, so we already are paying rather incrementally high lender borrowing costs across all different dimensions, whether it's local borrowers or even international borrowers. And I think the fact that it's taken so long to get us here, and even getting us here seems to be a caving in rather than finding an alternative way of raising the revenue. There'll be many more difficult conversations going forward about whether indeed this is still the same, you know, trading partner or borrowing partner that was there a few months ago or even a few weeks ago. And I'm not sure if National Treasury is ready for that particular battle, which will be mostly fought behind closed doors. But unfortunately, you and I will all experience it if after those closed door conversations, every single new lending arrangement comes at a higher borrowing cost.
Let's expand on public financial management. It's often seen as one of the most complex political deployments. What are some of the core challenges that governments face when managing public finances, especially in like today's economic climate?
Well, the primary challenge has always been the question of how to balance a political mandate with the practical realities of resource limitations. So what the political mandate is that every single party goes out onto the public and says, look, if you give us a chance to govern, this is what we'll do, this is what we'll fund, and this is what we will promote. And obviously that creates particular expectations from society, and if you don't perform very well on those, well, society punishes you. I think the ANC knows exactly what that means. However, whoever has been tasked with the responsibility of being the middleman in the conversation, of listening to what the demands are from the different departments and from the different government structures, and then checking how much can be funded and can be afforded, it's not an easy job. So you become an equal opportunity offender, in the sense that everybody would want to say, well, we want as much as possible. And every single citizen's actual ideal tax rate is 0%. But no one wants to pay any taxes. So how do you then create a taxation system that people feel, even though it's a grudge conversation, it is palatable, it is acceptable, because they can see where it's going? So you firstly have to ensure that sense of legitimacy with the citizens. And then on the other hand, when you're dealing with those that have been responsible, that are responsible for rolling out the services that were promised in the mandate that the public accepted when they accepted into the ballot box, you need to be able to manage expectations across the dimension and be able to explain that, look, even though this is what we wish we could do, this is what the resources tell us. So it's not the type of job that anyone can simply seamlessly walk into on any other day, and it requires a lot of, you know, trade-offs, a lot of negotiation capacity in order to be able to get a budget moving forward. I think what is clear here in the South African context is because the ANC has never been forced to actually explain its budgeting process, because there was no interrogation for the past 30 years. It's really got away with going for the easiest answers to all the difficult questions. And the easy answer would always be borrowing, because guess what? My financiers will give you money on any day, because all they can simply do is simply increase the interest they charge you if you think you're a risky borrower. And that's where South Africa finds itself.
Considering that you say that, and you know, we saw all the political horse trading going on, and the fact that the ANC has had a bit of a wake up call here, is there an upside here, especially for investors looking in? The DA, as part of this government of national unity, really flexing its muscle. Are they feeling a little bit more confident about what this GNU is actually doing?
Well, I think the upside was always the question of whether there will be a much more thorough way of interrogating how decisions are made. And what you want, with more voices in the room, with more ideas in the room, are the difficult questions being confronted rather than being avoided. And if you look at the crux of what the DA's contentions have been since this all started, there are those that are quite scandalous in nature. We keep hearing that they were trying to trade off other acts that have been passed into law in order to support that. It's obviously unjustifiable. But then there's also the other tension of, well, actually, in their engagement with public and with other political parties, they've been saying that, well, it doesn't matter that I can get this budget through. We need to be able to answer more the more difficult questions about, well, how are future budgets to be funded if the constraints that we're dealing with now are permanent in nature? And those are important conversations that we haven't had before, so we have to welcome those.
I mean, if you look at now, there's calls for the finance minister to resign or to be fired. He needs to be removed from that post purely because of what the damage that has been done to the credibility of the Treasury. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, it's really hard to find good leadership, and especially in these economic times.
Well, absolutely no surprises there. I mean, you can imagine that the political parties, even if you had not had such a protracted process, any interruption to a process that's been understood to work quite seamlessly over many years, simply because we're not interrogating it properly, that interruption would have elicited some rhetoric that says, well, perhaps these people don't know what they're doing. It doesn't help Treasury that, of course, they've had to go through this process, which will not be for a third time, because then people are going to keep asking that, wait, hold on, 2 months ago you were adamant it was completely impossible to work with anything except 2%. So how did you end up here? So how do we trust you to do the right calculations and the right estimations, even for future budgets? So there's absolutely no surprise that those calls are coming. But I think also it is quite unfortunate that when we talk about the capital markets in particular, they tend to be quite binary in their sentiment. It's either they trust you or they don't. And in instances where they look at your inability to convince even those that you've been put into government with. If you can't convince them that this is the right way to go, well, perhaps you're not the person for the job. We've seen it happening in the United Kingdom in particular, where the Chancellor had to go on the basis that the market said, how on earth do you put such a budget together? And then even the Prime Minister ended up leaving. Even in recent weeks, for all his filibustering, Donald Trump did acknowledge that, look, as soon as the market investors told me that the bond prices were about to go in the wrong direction, I was happy to pause on my tariffs. So it's not a conversation you can afford to ignore, because all governments are unfortunately so beholden to the capital market. They are not the type of stakeholder you can afford to ignore.
Well, it hasn't. We've seen it happen in other parts of the world, as you said, in the UK. I mean, it was just a matter of weeks. I think they lasted about a month, and then they were taken out. They were removed from the post. It's just hasn't been our style in South Africa. Accountability hasn't come through to the fore. We don't see ministers getting fired, getting removed. Do you think that Minister Godukwana is going to survive this?
Well, I think he will survive on the basis that the only man who can fire him is not in the habit of taking such decisions, at least not with any element of haste. And in fact, if you look in recent years, the only finance minister we've lost was Ndlandlanene out of principle, because he felt he could not maintain his position. That fund run was a different matter altogether, because yet again, as we just said, it was the sentiment of the market that made it very clear that his position was untenable. Other ministers who've lost their jobs have lost it on the question of the political hysteria and the political noise of the day. So when they look at Pravin Gordhan in and out, and also even Malusi Gigaba's exit from them. So the issues that tend to drive an exit are not the type of issues relating to job performance. They're always associated with the factionalism or indeed the paralyzed decision-making of the ANC itself. I think if the minister takes the view that he wants to vacate, then that will fast-track the process. But if he doesn't, I do not see the ANC guillotining a member of their own. They are notoriously hesitant to do that.
What lessons can be learned from leaders who have successfully navigated the difficult terrain of public finance management? I mean, we see, like we said, in other countries, people get removed if they are not performing. We don't see it in this country. But is there something that we can take from this? Can we change things without losing public trust or political power?
Well, I think the first part is obviously just to fix the mechanics of how the process works. There's clearly a disconnect between the powers that the minister has versus the parliamentary powers relating to interrogating what the minister has, because ultimately what he does is binding on not just his political party but on society at large. So I think the process of finding the right model for how these tax issues must be ventilated in order for budgets to be passed timelessly, that's the most critical thing that we need to focus on now. I don't know if our politicians are very good students. They tend to try to repeat the things that they've done before. So again, with this one, you can feel that there is obviously a realization that the system has particular flaws and particular problems, but whether this then translates to them championing a reform of the system for the benefit of the country is difficult to imagine, because everybody, as you've heard today, is simply selling their own position. So it's one of those truly extraordinary moments where absolutely every single person won the gold medal, even though we all know that there are only three medals to be awarded on the podium.
Obviously, lots of changes to be made, lessons to be learned here, but there's still a gaping hole. What happens now? 75 billion over the next 3 years. Where will this money come from?
According to the minister, it can only come from taxes, but the commissioner also said it's somewhere there on the table. Give me more money, I'll go and find it. That is one part of it. We do not know how big that gap is, and the commissioner's term is coming to an end. So if its term comes to an end, we need to make sure that we invest in the type of person who's going to continue on that quest to scrape as much out of the table under the existing tax architecture as possible. So I think that is probably what we're going to have to be able to deal with. Now, there is, of course, a very clear glaring hole in that we wouldn't be here if the type of activity that underpins all taxes, so whether you're talking transactional taxes, whether you're talking personal income tax or even corporate income tax, all of these only materialize if there is a very strong underlying economic performance. South Africa has no economic blueprint today to speak of that was going to get us there. So until that happens, I'm not sure if this is going to get resolved. it's done for this year, but it's going to come back and bite us in a couple of times.
Kaya, thank you so much for your time this evening. Kaya Sutola, accountant, academic, activist, independent economist. Thank you so much for your time.
And if you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.